A little after our start time, but was hoping a few more Senate members would show up. Maybe they'll trickle in as we go. Thanks to see all the House members here. And we're going to do a slight change in our agenda order here just to accommodate some scheduling. First, we're going to hear from our task force chair, Rick King, but following that, we're going to move Eric Jolly up to testify second and then put the Commissioner of Commerce after him. So with that,
I think
we'll just turn it over to Mr. Rick King, and let's hear about the your report. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Morning, everyone. My name's Rick King. I'm the Chief Technology Officer at Thomson Reuters Legal in Eagan by day. And over the last 15 months, day and night, I've had the privilege to serve as the chair of the Minnesota Ultra High Speed Broadband Task Force. I, along with my colleagues, am here to present our report as required by law that you created last April. So you have in front of you the report, and we'll talk a little bit about some of the contents, but the report itself has a lot of web site addresses, and there's also a version, an e-version of the report on CD, so I'm holding that up here. The nice part about the CD version is that all the links are hot, so if you want to go see the references or something, just click on them. So if there's utility to both. Minnesota is known throughout the country for our world-class knowledge businesses, universities, and innovative entrepreneurs, the knowledge manufacturers of the 21st century economy. Now our state needs the transportation system to take Minnesota's knowledge goods to the market. In the last century, Minnesota built an economy based on natural resources and transportation infrastructure that moved products to market by road, rail, air, and water. Today we are moving ideas and services, and we need broadband transportation infrastructure that moves this knowledge to the market at world-class levels in order to grow our state's economy. During my testimony today, I'd like to introduce you to some Minnesotans. David from St. Paul, Debbie from St. Francis, Jerry from just outside of Hastings, and Judy from Otter Tail County. Let's hear from Debbie now. This is what she said. Quote, I'm a national sales rep who works from home and only have the option of dial-up or satellite. When it is foggy, rainy, or snowing, I lose service. On the average, I lose 25 hours per month of work time due to weather-related outages. This loss of time does not include the slow speed. I would say I could save roughly 2 hours per day of work time by having broadband speed. This would allow me to build my business and hire new employees, end quote. And she lives in St. Francis, works for Hatton Corporation. This is an example, I would say, of somebody who we would call in the report underserved. You know, this is not the standard we aspire to in Minnesota or the level of service that will keep us as a leader in our country and the world. In April 2008, the leadership of the state of Minnesota took a giant step forward in its long-term planning by passing the law that created the Minnesota Ultra High Speed Broadband Task Force, and also another law that asked for broadband mapping. The task force convened in August 2008 to outline a path to ultra-high-speed internet access for all residents of the state by 2015. We need to think of ultra-high-speed broadband access as not just a communication system, but also a transportation system carrying massive amounts of electronic information for the 21st century. We need to invest in it. It's good economics. According to a U.S. Department of Commerce study, communities in which mass market broadband was available experienced more rapid growth in employment, the number of businesses overall, and businesses in IT-intensive sectors relative to comparative communities without broadband at the time. According to the recent statewide broadband mapping exercise, 94% of Minnesotans have access to broadband as defined by the FCC, currently 768 kilobits per second. The remaining 6%, or about 100,000 Minnesotans, 100,000 households, or 300,000 Minnesotans rather, they do not have access. If you take a look at the same data, but use our proposed goals for 2015, those goals that were generated by the task force, only 17% of Minnesotans meet the minimum threshold. Clearly, we have a long way to go. Over a year and a half, our group of 23 diverse members met with experts to learn the issues. We listened to the public. We researched solutions from other states and nations, and we debated the best way to meet our state's needs. We read, we studied, we heard presentations, we held meetings in the metro area and in greater Minnesota. All of these meetings, research, and dialogue culminated in the report that's before you today. As I said, we heard from many Minnesotans. In addition to Debbie from St. Francis, there are more stories. I'd like to tell you a story about Jerry, who lives just outside of Hastings. Jerry has a business called A1 Appliances, heating and air conditioning. Traditionally, I think we'd think of Jerry's business as a service business, but this is where things are different today. He often needs to download appliance manuals as part of his business. The companies that he provides service for do not send manuals to him anymore. It's his job to get them. At the time, Jerry only had dial-up at his home. With dial-up, the downloads took hours. He'd start the download, and he told us he went to bed, waking up in the morning hoping he had his manual. Because he didn't have DSL access, cable high-speed broadband access, or wireless at the good speeds, he had to create his own solution. Ultimately, his way to connect to the knowledge bases in other states where the information was to purchase a wireless broadband phone card and pay for service that way. We'd like to see him get speeds more predictably through the traditional means. I believe we've created actionable recommendations to make Minnesota a broadband leader in our nation. The task force report identifies clear goals for broadband in Minnesota, including serving all Minnesotans with high-speed broadband access as soon as possible, but no later than 2015. Secondly, achieving minimum broadband speeds for all Minnesotans of 10 to 20 megabits per second for downloads and 5 to 10 megabits per second for uploads. Now, we set these speed goals not for the speed itself, but as a result of the strong set of upcoming applications that require such speed. So we had a view of wanting to make sure Minnesotans could run these applications. These applications utilize high-definition video, often two-way video, for example, and are used in telemedicine, education, and telecommuting, just to name a few. Those were the minimum goals that we set. And then ensuring our sights are not just set on minimum speeds alone. We set ambitious plans to keep us as a state competitive in the U.S. and the world. We want to be in the top 5 states for overall speed. We want to be in the top 5 states for broadband access. And we want to be in the top 15 areas globally when compared to other countries for broadband penetration. Just a side note on this, as far as the states are concerned today, in terms of penetration and speed, the documentation and the report, best case suggests we're number 14. Worst case, we're about 24, so somewhere depending on how you measure it. Developing state policies that facilitate private-public partnerships and encourage broadband expansion through tax incentives for individuals, businesses, and internet providers is another recommendation. Forming an advisory council, the Broadband Advisory Council of Minnesota, to monitor our progress toward these 2015 goals and to further study complex issues such as funding and security. We found funding to be a major issue that we looked at. There's significant information about it in the report. There's great detail about what other states are doing, both in terms of ongoing councils as well as funding mechanisms. But frankly, we didn't have the expertise on our task force to really tackle funding. And I would suggest to you that when we talk about implementing the ongoing council, that all of you consider financial acumen and funding mechanisms as one of the criteria for membership on that, at least some portion of it. Let me go back to the minimum speed goals for a moment. Many question how a specific number can be pegged. And you know, some will say it's too low and not ambitious enough. Others will say it's too high and unachievable. Our task force believes it's just right. We selected the minimum based on the bandwidth that's required to provide new and emerging applications that will enhance the lives of Minnesotans. Those things that they will get could get today and certainly will have by 2015. You might call it purposeful speed selection. I've mentioned these applications before, but let me spend a minute on three of them. Each uses broadband to deliver services that previously required us to move people on highways, often during peak hours. So in addition to providing better services cheaper, we'll also save fuel and help limit overbuilding other areas of our transportation infrastructure. Let's talk about healthcare and telemedicine. Today, many of the providers in Minnesota and certainly around the nation and the world can do significant monitoring of patients in their home through two-way high-definition video and audio. The trick is the patient has to have broadband capability to their home that will allow that to happen. Otherwise, they're going to a local clinic, they're in a car, they're going somewhere outside the home. And we all know that for driving down the cost of healthcare, one of the things that we could do is provide it a different mechanism, a cheaper way, and keeping people home is known to be better medicine and also significantly cheaper. And it also allows rural areas and areas that don't have certain specialties to bring that specialty right to that area via this high-definition two-way video. That's available today, and people in the healthcare community are actually testing it and using it. In fact, on the 27th of October, there was an article in the Wall Street Journal about telemedicine, and it specifically was talking about what they refer to as the eICU. So they're actually monitoring people remotely in an ICU environment. So the ICU capabilities, 24/7 coverage and monitoring, were actually in a different location than where the patient was housed. Once again, that gives the opportunity to give better service in a certain area at a cheaper cost that we're all concerned with. Second area is education. We've heard testimony and stories. We had a superintendent of schools on our task force, but we also had significant testimony from people in education. And we heard a story, an individual was on a bus an hour and a half in the morning and an hour and a half at night to get to a school. And I think about the number of times that that person has to do that and whether we could just once a week, maybe twice a week, through high-definition two-way video technologies, bring that school to their house and keep them off the road. We also have examples of advanced courses for school districts who can't afford to provide those. Maybe it's the unique science class that's very advanced, maybe French 5, whatever it is. Couldn't we offer those services from school districts that actually provide them today through this mechanism so that districts could offer things that were well beyond their own means? And in fact, is there a reason that French 5 couldn't be taught in conjunction with a school system in Paris? Finally, the telecommuting angle, and this is an angle that interests our particular business because inside the business walls, we buy all the capability we need for broadband. We're not like the consumer. Unfortunately, it costs us a lot of money. But we have good service and we're happy. It's when our folks go home. We need our people at work, and we're not uncommon among knowledge companies, to be able to use the same applications that they do at work at home. And that requires higher bandwidth than they typically enjoy around very many employer areas. That telecommuting angle, working from home, is very important. It provides coverage for two-income families to be able to take care of kids, to be able to take care of elderly parents and other issues that come up in the household. But it also allows companies to be flexible in the way they look at the workforce. If I describe one of those situations to you, you'll know what I mean. We have a call center of people that are located in Eagan. There's about 300 people. We'd like to be able to have those people wherever they live, and some of them don't live in Eagan, which is pretty well served by incumbent providers, but they live in other places as well. We'd like them to be able to use the same applications at home that they use at work. And this group could probably stay home and do their job 4 days a week. They simply need to have more complex setup, more bandwidth at home, because visualize that they actually use the computer for their phone. They have voice over IP. They also have one computer that when they get an inbound call that we route from our switch, it pops up the customer's name, information, billing data, what they subscribe to, everything we know about that customer, including the last time they called, who spoke to them, and what the resolution was. They got outstanding bills, we know about it. If they paid ahead, we know about it. They weren't happy, we know about it. It's everything we know. The other screen, another application, has what we call a knowledge base. Ever wonder how those reps on the phone seem to always have some answer for some question? Well, the knowledge base allows them to put in your question and up come the treasure trove of information from all the questions of all the time. So while they're on the phone using voice over IP over that broadband line, they have two significantly heavy applications on as well. And sometimes the calls come in from customers by video. So that would add even more complexity. So in other words, that's the kind of environment that people look at in terms of moving workers home and saying, we need to be able to have them do the same kind of thing at home as they do at work. So enacting legislation to achieve these goals and to drive toward reaching the pinnacle of broadband leadership would be a means to an even greater end, as we'd be equipping Minnesota businesses and individuals to take advantage of the full range of economic development and quality of life issues afforded by the internet today. We'll hear a little bit about David. David has a company called Mojo Solo. It was founded 5 years ago. It's a new breed, cutting-edge creative agency that does marketing. It's grown from nothing, total startup, to 12 full-time employees on-site in St. Paul. He uses resources and has customers in Germany, Switzerland, and Singapore. There's a strong emphasis placed on technology in his business and on a global client model. This is just a very small business starting up in St. Paul. Mojo works, though, with Fortune 1000 corporations all over the world. They are small, and they need with technology to be able to compete with people that are much bigger than them. And this is something that David told us. Quote, it's important to me that I have access to the best-in-class high-speed broadband infrastructure to compete on a global basis. Our clients demand the best, both in terms of service and product, and in terms of high-definition video that meets their needs. He goes on, I've read in the past how such and such country has 50 times the upload speed that I do, and I ask, how come we don't have that in Minnesota? If one of our domestic or international clients asks for a last-minute change to a video that we produced in high definition, it takes us only a couple minutes to make the change. But it means another 1 to 2 hour upload to our server in order for the customer to be able to grab that. This is troubling to me because I've had a few clients become frustrated with this unnecessary time delay, and I wonder if they're actually thinking that it would be easier for them to work with somebody closer to them. Now, David's in an area that's pretty well served, but David has an extraordinary use way beyond what we've defined as the minimum. Consider these opportunities. Expansion of broadband is one of the most effective public investments for economic growth. For every dollar invested in broadband, the economy sees a tenfold return. This is in the literature that we've seen. And nationwide investment in broadband infrastructure is likely to create or retain 1 to 2.5 million jobs in the coming years. With more than 80% of Minnesota's economy today wrapped into knowledge and service industries, high-speed broadband has the potential to unlock enormous economic growth for the state. Broadband also offers new healthcare and education opportunities through telemedicine, distance learning, online education, and other opportunities that are otherwise out of the reach for many greater Minnesota's residents. But Minnesota must act swiftly if we're to achieve the full economic advantage of broadband investment. Broadband investment is already underway across the country with more than $7 billion for broadband expansion and upgrades included in the 2009 economic stimulus legislation. At the time, the Federal Communications Commission Broadband Task Force is exploring many of the same questions studied by the Minnesota Task Force, and their report in national policy is due to Congress by February. That's why it's important that Minnesota move to implement the task force recommendations in order to take full advantage of this opportunity to make Minnesota a national technology, economic, development, and quality of life leader for the 21st century. When Judy from Otter Tail said, quote, "I don't pay bills online because it's quicker to write a check and mail it," unquote, she was expressing the frustration of thousands of unserved and underserved Minnesotans. The 21st century demands more of us. Let us keep in mind her words as we work on the ultra-high-speed broadband infrastructure to serve all Minnesotans at our proposed minimum level. Let's make sure her story is a legacy story. When the legislative session starts, I encourage you to use the task force goals and timeframes and our idea of creating a broadband advisory council for Minnesota and enact them into law. The Minnesota Ultra High Speed Broadband Task Force report sets ambitious goals for the state. In the pages, you will find a thorough description of our recommendations. Our proposed actions will help Minnesota bring reliable, affordable, and ubiquitous broadband service to all Minnesotans and will ensure they get the service options they need. I believe it is important for our state and its economic vitality. It's important for me personally to live in a state that's innovative and willing to take a stand. Please join me in doing so. I thank you for the time to talk to you, and we'll be able to take some questions, I'm sure, once all the testifiers are done. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. King. And I know we probably do have a lot of questions, but in respect of one of our presenters' time and needing to get out of here, we could have him step forward now and then hear from the other testifiers and put all our questions out at one time. So at this point, maybe we could have Mr. Jolly come up. Welcome.
Thank you, Senator Dahl, Representative Johnson, representatives and senators. I'm Dr. Eric Jolly, president of the Science Museum of Minnesota. I'm delighted to see this report and know that we continue to put Minnesota on the leading edge of science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. I'd like to take just a moment to speak to three aspects of the report. First, its importance as a target goal to have ultra-high-speed broadband access for all of our citizens, and then two aspects of the implementation that I find to be very important. Access to broadband information is really the most common way for information to be disseminated in this age. It is growing rapidly. That is where data is stored. It is where knowledge is accessible. It is important that we find ways to give those avenues of access to those avenues of information to all of our state. It's important because without access to that information, we don't have the kind of informed citizen that supports strong democracy. I believe that science is an essential literacy. It's essential for economic participation, but it is also essential for civic participation. In an age where 48% of high school graduates cannot accurately identify that it takes the Earth 1 year to revolve around the sun, we should be afraid. We need to be concerned about those who support us and vote, those who manage our public institutions, that we give them access to the kind of information that will allow them to be informed on such issues as genetically modified organisms, stem cell research, management of water and water quality issues. These are all things that have been a part of the Science Buzz program of the Science Museum of Minnesota. Giving citizens around the nation access to leading scientists is an award-winning, nationally respected program that should help inform all of our citizens as well as those of our nation. The Science Museum of Minnesota provides on-site access to teacher professional development and research programming in every county in this state. But our reach is limited, our time on task is limited. It could become unbridled if we had the ability to disseminate to our greater Minnesota much more fully. We're developing outreach programs that allow virtual exhibits to be seen in schools using the legacy funds that we've recently acquired. We would like to make that available throughout Minnesota, not just to those with high-speed access. We believe that having high-speed access is real. It's going to have a measurable impact on people's life. It is more than a theoretical exercise or a status symbol. It is the difference between reaching a global audience or being a local business. It is the difference between having access to health care and health reform knowledge or not. It's perhaps the difference between emptying our rural communities or maintaining them as vibrant, important communities that contribute to all of our state's well-being. We're imagining virtual exhibits, more distance learning programs, the ability to support museums and distance science centers, but only if they can access the materials that we can bring forward. And so I hope that we will develop ultra-high-speed broadband access for all of our citizens. It is good for our business. It will support the Science Museum, a national leader in exhibit construction and education and programming, should not have more ability to serve outside of this state than it has inside of this state. Two aspects of the report that I would also like to draw your attention to. We are particularly pleased with the benchmarking. While a 10 to 20 megabyte download is a good benchmark at this time, things change. Quad processors have recently hit schools and classrooms. People are taking them into their homes. This rate of speed that we are seeing technology eat up internet access is always accelerating. And so I am delighted that we are going to benchmark to the top five states in terms of speed, the top five states in terms of penetration, and the top 15 compared to nations. We are doing this in Minnesota with the TIMSS studies as we represent ourselves as a nation in understanding our achievement in mathematics and science. We must do the same in our engineering and technology infrastructure. I think that's critical. I also think that it's critical to have an advisory council, because speeds will change, and so will other factors. When I was a young man, I would ask my parents, I'd say, how big am I? And they would say, take me across that door in the kitchen and mark a line, and a few months later, how big am I? And they'd mark a line a little higher. And well, after I reached 18, the question, how big am I, required a ruler around my waist. And that's where we saw the growth. What we measure in terms of size and strength and value changes as technologies mature. An advisory council will allow us to continue to stay at the cutting edge and choose the right measures for the time. Without an advisory council, without a benchmarking that allows us to be something other than static, we will simply achieve at 2011 a goal that will later pass us by. We need to have benchmarking, non-static approach to setting our goals, and an advisory council that keeps us abreast of all of the current data and information. I thank you for your time and attention to what we consider to be one of the most important advances in this state's technology infrastructure, broadband access. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Jolly. Appreciate your comments. At this point, why don't we bring up the Commissioner of Commerce. Commissioner Wilson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chairman Dole and Johnson, members of the committee. Appreciate the opportunity to be here today and testify on the Ultra-High-Speed Broadband Task Force. As a member, I was privileged to serve with some pretty outstanding people. But I commend you first for establishing the committee to recognize the importance of high-speed broadband to the state and how it will affect the citizens and the business of the state. I also want to recognize, on behalf of the administration, the good work of the chairman, Rick King, the staff from Thomson Reuters did outstanding work, the committee members that spent more than 20 days each on this topic, traveling around the state, to gather information throughout the state from all sorts of businesses, schools, libraries, and the rest to be make it a part of this report. I don't think that in all my years in serving on committees such as this, that I've worked on one that was more intent, gave more serious attention to the job, and everybody showed up at the meetings and participated in all-day meetings. So it was a great pleasure for me to be a part of it. Thank you also for the task force members that produced the I've got it, I read it, and I'm pretty proud of the work that was established by the committee. A lot of the education and discussion that went on is represented in the report, the process. There's many words of a lot of discussion before words were written down. Now we have the report, and there's consideration of the information and recommendations of the report in initiating the process, which will enable Minnesota to take advantage and forward-looking achievements of these goals. Among the many things that I learned while serving on the task force is how broadband is used and could be used to improve the lives of Minnesotans all around. Also, I was impressed with the large role that broadband plays in business and government. I'll take a few minutes to give you just a few examples that really caught my attention. I could probably give many, but just a few. When at a meeting not long ago in Red Wing, a doctor was testifying or gave information relative to his practice, and he hadn't been on the Internet before. It was required by the hospital and the clinic that he worked with. And he put his 1,850 diabetic patients online, put their health records online and or on his computer, and began to track his work. And he admits today that he thought he was a good doctor before, but he's better today because of it. He's able to track the medicine and the outcomes. He's able to track the importance of having people take their medication and report it. In fact, quarterly he calls the top 3% and congratulates them not only on the work that he's done, but it takes their follow-up and follow-through to make the top 3%. And he calls the bottom 3% and reminds them that either he's not doing his job or they're not doing theirs, and suggests to them that maybe they find a doctor that they can get along with better, or that they start all over. And if they want to start all over with him, to call back and make an appointment, and we'll try again. 46 of the 50 did. And they were – so that's the way that one doctor has been able to improve his practice. Another area that I was interested in, and secondly, the terms of economic development that we know that's needed in to connect the nation and internationally is increasing. There's no question about that. The previous testimony gave light to that as well. A study done by the ETA Center at the University of Minnesota Crookston showed that 90% of the rural businesses surveyed had at least one computer connected to the Internet, and only 66% 5 years ago. Moreover, while 85% felt that their current broadband speeds met their needs, only 37% were confident that a year from now or 2 years from now that it would be adequate. More than half of the respondents indicated that they planned to increase their current connection speed within the next 12 months. The needs for broadband connection and for increasing speeds is an example of the importance of broadband in business, including small businesses in rural Minnesota. Third, I'd like to give the example of our own department. I've been on the job almost 7 years. And two quick examples. We licensed badly before. We have over 220,000 licensees in the state. We track 1 million hours of continuing education, 22,000 courses, 850 places where you can get it, and we did it badly. It was all on paper, and usually it was confusing. There was seldom ever reconciliation between the provider of the education, the student, and our department. Today, it's entirely different. You can go online and reconcile your education class. You can get your licenses renewed within about 10 minutes by putting in a small amount of data, using a credit card to pay. Check your continuing education and print out your certificate. In 10 to 15 minutes, you're ready to go. We've eliminated the waiting room. We've eliminated the five cashiers and reassigned a good number of people in the department. One other quick example, when I walked into the department 7 years ago, we had four rooms dedicated to files, paper files that were all the filings of the insurance companies came in boxes and crates. Filings for the energy suppliers of the state came in crates. It would take us days to put them in the file room, stack them up. Anybody in the public often needed them. It would take us 2 days to dig them out, a day to copy them, 25 cents per copy for any of these copies to the public. Today they're accessed on the Internet wherever they're needed, when they're needed, 24/7. We've eliminated a good number of people and used that those folks to work in the consumer response area. Those are just a few of the examples that I can give, but businesses all over the state were impressive to me in the amount of broadband that they use and the way they use it. One other quick example, in an ethanol plant that we visited not long ago, they used to fly people in to upgrade their formulas and the electronics or the programming for the equipment. Today, they no longer do that. They call a supplier and or a blender, and they tell them that they have they're going to shut down at midnight. They want the programming to be done over the net, and so that they're up for business in the morning, and they'll have the staff on site to do it. And without fail, they save the expense of bringing somebody in, traveling across the state to the ethanol plant, so that the downtime is almost entirely eliminated. And I could go on. So without any further comment on that, I was impressed over and over by all the ways and all the examples that were given, particularly in the healthcare field. There are many other examples, and I'll eliminate going into them, but healthcare, education, emergency services, telecommuting, energy savings, entertainment, all are considered by the citizens to be important, and their usage is expected to increase dramatically in the next year to two. I appreciate the opportunity to have served on the committee and the opportunity to be here and testify before this committee. I think that it's extraordinarily important to the future of the state, both to the state government and to the citizens and business. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Can you stay for just a few questions? I think maybe we'll adjust a little bit. I think if we start getting too many presenters, then we got, what were we going to ask the question of? And maybe we could start to shift a little bit here, because I think maybe some of our members are starting to get some questions. I have one. And from you, if I could.
Well, and I appreciate it, because I brought Diane Wells, who's the I'm not the authority on broadband, but I can tell you that
this
I do
is
have backup.
Maybe from just a leadership standpoint, you know, from the Commerce Commissioner, that I see you support this whole idea, and you see the connections with all areas of our community and the business sector and education and healthcare. As we go forward, obviously, funding and these new kind of innovative approaches to find ways to build these systems out are going to be necessary. Will the Commerce Department be working to generate some of these ideas and these connections with the private sector to develop the revenue ideas that we need?
Yes. The report addresses that to some degree. I'll tell you the other thing that I did notice in the committee work. This is such an important issue to businesses and all the other aspects of life in Minnesota that I really believe that the businesses and individuals to a large degree are willing to fund the access that they think they need to continue their lifestyle, their business, and to be able to grow it. When we talk to business, they see it as a tool, just like any other tool, in terms of importance to it. So while it's always an issue, yes, the answer to your question is the department will be interested in how we get this funded.
Excellent. Now, and then as far as the next step then from the legislature, as we move forward and we kind of digest this report, is there one or two things that you think are essential first steps in this next session that we should accomplish?
Our department hasn't gone that far to look at that.
Okay.
In terms of the report.
This advisory council is one that keeps getting mentioned. I know that's something that I think we need to have, but is that critical from your point of view that we get that established and going forward?
As an advisory council, yes. I think that the performance of the committee to date would warrant its continuation.
Okay. Well, I'll open up to other members then. Welcome to the committee.
Yes. Thank you, Senator. Good to be here.
Senator Giffmeyer.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and chairmans, I should say. Thank you very much. Appreciate the work of the committee. You can tell just by reading this report a tremendous lot of work has been done. Just this baseline and all the documents that you have are very valuable. And Dr. Jolly, as well as Mr. King and Commissioner, your testimony, very insightful and excellent. I think one of the things that I would like to, and maybe some of the members in the future here might be addressing this somewhat, but I think, Commissioner, in your position for Commerce, I'm very interested in the creating and the maintaining of jobs. And that's a humongous goal. But maybe you can add a little bit more, flesh out a little bit more about the creating and the maintaining of jobs, just a little more details on how that might occur, maybe how we might measure it, because it's an absolute laudable goal. We all agree to that. We all agree to many of these wonderful things. But in particular, just this area about creating and maintaining jobs, can you flesh that out a little bit more? Maybe somebody else can.
Mr. Chairman, member. There are two answers to that, I think. One, our department does not regulate broadband, and we are a regulatory department, so that it's not within our jurisdiction, I don't believe, to really be a promoter and to be able to answer that question dramatically. But I do think that with the interest that I saw around the state, that it's always an issue as to how things get funded, but less so in this case. I'm sorry that I know you're looking for others, and I think there are others behind me, frankly, that are much better positioned in OET indeed to answer that.
Thank you, Commissioner. I don't know, Mr. King, do you want to also add anything to that? Or not? You certainly can come to the table if you'd like as well, but you know, you don't have to.
I think perhaps, Mr. Chair, that the question will be well answered by Commissioner McElroy's testimony.
Very good.
Okay, good.
Other questions?
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I just wanted to introduce it because I wasn't quite sure, and I didn't want to miss the opportunity if Commissioner Wilson wanted to address it or Mr. King would. But nonetheless, absolutely, I'm sure. I know we have three more wonderful testifiers, so we'll leave it for that.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you. I don't know if you're able to answer these questions, but as I'm looking through the report, there are some questions that are coming to my mind. So if you can't, if other presenters are planning to speak to this, that would be fine. I'm very interested in the recommendations around mapping and being able to have a good baseline of where we're at in the state. And I'm trying to remember, we've had conversations in our committee hearings in the Senate about mapping, and I thought that there was an initiative that was moving forward in regard to mapping. And I'm just not remembering much more than that. That I know we've had that conversation. I know the Rural Policy Center in Southern Minnesota had started a process of doing some mapping, and I can't remember where we went with that, if we'd authorized something further and funded that. That's one question. The other is the delineation of the kinds of different activities that different levels of government can engage in order to get the infrastructure in place in terms of public policy or statutory or local ordinances. And I'm just curious to know, how does that get picked up? Is that something that the group is working on to get the League of Cities involved in local communities engaging in those activities? How is that going to move forward? And there's reference to the stimulus money that's been made available, and I'm wondering if that's been directed or defined or placed in a direction that helps achieve some of these recommendations. So that's a lot of questions, but I'm hoping somewhere along the line we get some answers to that.
Are those questions suited for the two of you or another one of our presenters?
Mr. Chair, I believe I can address those questions.
Mr. King.
As to the question about the mapping, the legislature passed a mapping bill last year. And the results of the mapping from that legislation are actually contained in a subset in the report. Some of the maps are also here, and I can show you the different ones. But the posters have fewer maps than what is actually in the report. And the report that the legislature will receive from Connected Nation, who was contracted to do the mapping through the Department of Commerce, has even more maps and data than what we put in the report. there's a great online site, Connect Minnesota, that allows you to interactively look into different areas down to the census block to determine different types of connectivity, different types of technology used, and so forth. What the task force did was took the data from that mapping and used it in some of our projections. So that's what you have already... That's what you have already authorized. The stimulus funds, so I'll answer your third question and tie it into the mapping as well. The stimulus funds allocate a certain amount per state for mapping. Some states in the U.S. have not done any mapping, and some fewer have done mapping like Minnesota has. So Minnesota is in the process of contracting with Connected Nation, but in essence, they connected Nation to do a second round of mapping. It's actually a contract with a federal agency to do the mapping, so that it then is given back to Minnesota to do the state work, and that's how the funds flow on the stimulus package as it pertains to mapping. So you have some maps, and you're going to get some more. That's the summary. And the second set will come not at the state cost, but at the federal cost. While I'm on the stimulus, if you'd like, I'll give you just a couple of points about that. Each state submitted different applications directly from applicants to the agencies, NTIA, National Telecom Infrastructure. They are the ones that are reviewing the applications that have been submitted. These are not state submissions. They are often from a combination of a private-public enterprise, often nonprofits, sometimes county or municipal. They come in the areas of education and training, infrastructure, those types of areas. And it is something that is in the hands of that federal agency exclusively to make the funding decision. There was a state, a high-level state review team that simply looked at them and said, in our opinion, the state team put them in this particular order. The federal government is under no obligation to follow that order, and they have also prescribed rules about any of the people that were looking at those applications, their ability to talk about those, because they've asked them to be kept confidential until they make their decision on who gets funding at their level. So it's a bit of a mystery to many, and there are a lot of questions asked about it as a consequence. As to the second question about government engagement, I think that realistically, we know that the state has a lot of demands for its limited financial resources. And I think even in light of that, state government and leaders can play a significant role in getting broadband to spread out along the state as prescribed in our report. The idea of setting a target minimum goal, the idea of setting how well you want to land in the states, of the United States, and the idea of setting a timeline for that and that every Minnesotan will get covered is akin to setting one of those big goals that then all public entities and private entities actually can steer to the same destination. I think there's a lot of power in articulating a goal, an end result, and where people want to go. What we've found is even since we've done this task force work, and even as we started to talk about where we needed broadband and where we didn't have it and what speeds there would be, the private providers, the significant providers in the state of Minnesota, have upped their speeds twice, if not more, during that period of time. And we've also seen some of those levels aggressively reduced in terms of price. So I think, again, without regulation, without legislation that actually puts money into the pot, the bully pulpit and the direction used can be a significant thing for our government and our leadership to provide to get us in
to the right direction.
Just a follow-up. Thank you for that. I was just noting that there were suggestions that it's true for any transportation corridor. This is a transportation corridor in my mind, that cities and townships and counties have a role, too, in terms of controlling the right-of-way. And there are suggestions in here about the kinds of things municipalities ought to be thinking about, you know, ordinances about towers, for example. That's my question, is how are we pulling in those local units, the government, to think about those kind of regulatory things well ahead of when they might be needing them or applying them, so that those issues are resolved and everybody's positioned well for being having access to broadband. I have many in my district, Gibbon, Lafayette, Nicollet, communities that really are struggling and could really economically benefit from this kind of reach into the rural area. So I'm curious about how are we drawing those communities in and getting them to engage in visioning process and how this can be helpful to them in positioning themselves in a positive way.
Mr. King?
Mr. Chair, I think it's a terrific question and point. We were pleased to have strong participation from many of the municipal and county associations. We had members from rural and municipal entities, counties, rural and municipal, and also state government representatives on the task force. This concern was their concern, and the League of Cities was involved, entities like that, very interested in how to make sure members were aware of the types of things that have gone on. Two simple suggestions that come up all the time. One is more local, and one actually turned out to be federal, but didn't take much to get something to happen. When a trench is open and somebody's putting some utility in a road because the road is being reconstructed, that's the time if all the people that run some type of line through that road to upgrade, because the most expensive part of putting in a line is the construction costs. So alerting people through some kind of public mechanism that tells them construction's going to happen there and it's going to be open during these periods and what the process is to accelerate them being able to get permits to do whatever they want to do is one of the things that I think was highlighted by our municipal and our county representatives, and they brought that back to their organizations. On a federal level, we had conversations. We stayed away from most federal things, but the right-of-way on roadways was kind of an important issue because our roadways, our federal roadways, our interstates carry a fair amount of broadband capacity underneath the surface. And the same thing was true. There was a difficulty in the federal law that allowed for right-of-way for that type of infrastructure to be put in. And Congressman Oberstar was instrumental in getting that piece of legislation last year taken care of so that it's a lot easier for people to get right-of-way across the interstate property as well.
Okay. I think Representative Junkie had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good to see the report. I think it's a good start. I think you would agree with that it's not by any means an end. And, there's a lot of holes in here yet that need to be filled in. I have a couple questions. First of all, to the speeds, 10 to 20 and 5 to 10 down and uploads, is that measured, is that a constant speed or is that a snapshot speed? You know, when my cable connection at home advertises a speed, I can usually get towards that speed at 2 or 3 in the morning, but at 5 to 7 at night when everyone turns on and utilizes that equipment, close, and it sometimes gets back towards dial-up speed. So what kind of measurement is that? You say, is that a snapshot that I could take any time during the day and attain that, or is that a constant speed, a static speed across time during the day?
Mr. King?
Mr. Chair, the measurements that are used in the mapping are snapshots, clearly, and they're initiated by the users themselves. So you know, if you were more apt to use the technology during the time when it tends to be slower, using Representative's point, then that speed would have been captured in the mapping exercise and then would have been mapped forward. So retrospectively, we're looking at the speed point in time, and it's probably pretty accurate that way. When we look at the speed going forward as a goal, as a minimum, we would like to see that be the constant minimum available, because we didn't arrive at that, you know, through some mathematical exercise. It was arrived at by looking at the applications. And in the first recommendation in your book, you'll see a 3 or 4 page chart that shows different speeds in different applications. And our objective was to get a minimum speed that would run the type of two-way high-definition video applications and other applications that we thought were important for Minnesota. So in order for Minnesotans to run that, that speed has to be the minimum. So it has to be the minimum and has to be constant.
Mr. Chair, thank you for that. I think that's important because, again, typically we'll pay for speed out from a provider, and that speed will not be available at any time that a normal person or business would utilize it. So I think that's something that we need to keep in mind as we move forward with legislation. Then my other question to you is, and what worries me the most and has for years and years and years, especially with government involvement, is, you know, this technology isn't static, and it changes so rapidly that it's hard to get a handle on from a government entity. 2 years ago, when we were developing your charge as your task force, we were arguing at the table on 1 and 2 megabyte speeds. And you've come back a year later, literally, when this passed, basically a year and a half later, at 10 to 20. So, number one, I think the benchmarking, being in the top five or being in, I think that helps and that needs to be consistent. But I'm going to take it a step further and ask if you've looked at, if you're a good share of my sales staff in rural Minnesota, a good share of my students, a good share of folks, I'll say under 35 or 40, their high-speed technology comes on a cell phone. So have you looked at broadband, 3G, 4G going on? Was that part of your discussion? Because at the time it's pretty open the way we worded it. We just talked about broadband access. Did your group talk about broadband here? And then I'll follow up with a comment after that.
King.
Mr. Chair, again, good points made. We are very technology neutral in all of what we recommended in the report. There were several technologies that today don't meet the minimum. We did talk a lot about wireless, and 4G wireless will surpass the minimum. 3G wireless in some places actually does come very close to meeting the minimum today. And we believe that if it meets the minimum, you can run the applications on it, it is a solution. So it doesn't have to be a fiber connection. It doesn't have to be a coax. It doesn't have to be a certain technology. It just has to be at that speed so that you can run those applications over that. And that's how we arrived at the speed. And the representative makes a really good point about the speeds, the adoption of technology just goes tremendously rapidly. TV took a long time. Radio was a long time. iPods went, in a third of the time to get to the same large group of users. And you got 100 million Twitter people in less than 9 months. So, things accelerate exponentially beyond your own capability to really think about it. So there's two things that we discussed because this was a big topic for us. And one was you need that council to advise and keep track of things. And number two, that's why you have a minimum contrasted with top five. Because top five means if technology breaks through and things go really fast, you've got to go really fast to stay in the top five. If it goes slower, then you can go at the market rate a little slower. Today we've got to go double fast to catch up and get into the top five. But I think with the minimum saying everybody needs just this amount, and realizing that through the mapping exercise, we understand that only 17% of the Minnesotans have 10 megabit or better today. So there are, even though that number sounds low to some, there's a lot of distance to go to get people just that level of service throughout the state by 2015. So I do believe that that will serve us well, but I wouldn't be surprised if I was talking to you and you would ask this question in 2 or 3 years, that the 10 would become 50. It would be the logical thing if the data suggested and the pricing suggested and the need suggested that that's what's required.
And finally, Mr. Chair, just a comment to members as we develop, and I hope we develop some things before session. I assume both chairs are going to work on that with their committees and move as rapidly forward on some of this as possible. But my comment, members, is as we develop this, still consider, and Senator Sharon brought it up over there, look at the maps in here and start thinking about broadband availability across the state. And also then I'm going to add to lay on top of these maps, and I hope we can get Connect Minnesota and others to help us with this, to lay cell phone access and 3G, 4G access. Honestly, members, there's still two Minnesotas out there. There are areas in rural Minnesota you can't get a cell phone signal. Not a drop call. You can't get a signal. That's insane in this state. And you certainly, for most of rural Minnesota, can't get 3 and going on 4G access now. And then look at the Twin Cities coverage. You know, drop calls are a problem when there's too much traffic and you're stuck in a jam. Drop calls are problems with trees and buildings. I get that. But the service is available. And I'd ask everyone as we develop this to think about who's going to come live in rural Minnesota and work there and bring their business there and their sales staff there and everyone else if, as they drive from work to their place where they live, they don't have cell phone service or their sales staff isn't available all the time to utilize their phones on the road as they travel, or that our emergency personnel can't use their phones to coordinate emergency calls out there in rural Minnesota. It's huge, members, and I'm glad this report is here because I think it's time to get a rapid start on uniform deployment of all services across the state. I wanted to wake up my lobbyists sitting out here because I think it is something we need to talk about and we need to get going. And whatever barriers are there, and you didn't identify all of them, particularly when it comes to the wireless and towers and access and building out and other things, but it's things that I think we can help with in a public-private partnership way. But there's no excuse anymore in this state, members, to have two Minnesotans when it comes to technology. And that's what this starts with. But to the chairs, I think we need to rapidly put together some packages to keep moving that ball forward in a very distinct way. So
thank you, Representative Junkie. We do want to keep the momentum going with what we learned from this report. Thank you, Commissioner. We have about 20 minutes before we want to wrap this up. I know we got a lot of questions, but we have three other presenters that would like to go forward. Can your questions wait? The ones that
I want to just follow up real quick, so hopefully somebody can answer this, because I know some of the committee members were talking about this, and Representative Junkie, Senator Sharon. I'm worried about creating winners and losers. You know, innovation is going to drive the economy, and I found that dead site between Kimball and Litchfield the other day for cell phones. Didn't work. But I'm jealous that you get cable TV, because I'm in Anoka County. I don't get cable TV. And that's part of the problem that I don't see addressed in the report either is, you know, when you've got a development that has great high-speed access and you're one of the guys that's not in the development across the street, you can't get access to anything. We haven't really thought through that, I don't think, in the report. And that doesn't really show up in the mapping. So I think we really need to deal with that as well, because we're going to end up with that in the same thing when you go into a smaller town and maybe it's been thought through, so I'd like to find that out. But if one side of the street in the town gets the high-speed access, the other side doesn't get it, did we really solve anything, or did we, again, create winners and losers? Well, hopefully we have some.
Okay. Any comments?
My comment would be the goal of the task force and great discussion about that would have us serving all of those people with the minimum level by 2015. And today in the mapping exercise that was done and the one that will be done, the speed test would be able to differentiate between the person on one side and the person on the other side in terms of the speed they get, they respond to the instruction. So let's say the have not in your case has only dial-up access, and the have can get through whatever mechanism at least a couple megabit service. That would be recorded that way, and the average for that particular area would be brought down. The person with dial-up only would be designated as underserved. They're connected but not at the speed that's appropriate, whereas the other one could be considered, since it's over 768 kb, they're served. And then we want to move the served level up. So I think the encouragement that I would give to members who have constituents that are in areas not served is when go out and when the speed test time comes up, you need to go do the speed tests, because it records whatever you are and whatever speed you're getting. And particularly if the speed isn't that good in that area, it's important that we really do flag that area and get coverage there.
Very good. Thank you. Well, let's bring up Commissioner McElroy, if we could, at this point, and get Deed's perspective on this. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I want to join those who have given thanks to Rick King. He did a great job, and to all the members of the task force, and appreciate that. From Deed's point of view, there are two aspects to the broad aspects to this issue, and the second one has two parts. Clearly, some of the great benefits of ubiquitous, affordable, dynamic, continually improving access to the internet will come in the workforce development side of what we do through high-quality early childhood education, K-12 education, workforce center services, and higher education, which are critical to our continuing to being competitive. Others have talked about those in detail, and I'm not going to get into those in detail. The other part of our mission is assisting individuals and, or excuse me, businesses and communities to be prosperous, and that's always or often a competitive enterprise. Part of what of that competition is access to broadband as a utility. Is there fiber or very high quality coax or very high quality copper or high quality wireless available? Do I have choices if I need it? Is there redundant internet? And on the utilization side, am I able to, if I am a small and emerging business, can I get service that I can afford? Can I get help if I need it in learning to use the technology? It is not a single story across Minnesota. We have many success stories where very high-speed internet is available in a wide variety of places. I was very surprised to visit a very small business in Big Fork, Minnesota, Berquist Manufacturing, and find out that Arvig offered 25 megabyte down. I don't remember what the up was. In an area 75 miles north of Grand Rapids, about halfway to International Falls. But then to be working with a business in a fairly dense urban neighborhood in a large city and find out that they were a $300,000 cable run away from access to almost anything. In general, we do quite well in most larger cities, regional centers, sub-regional centers. We have challenges in some smaller communities, particularly those who are further away. Senator Sharon mentioned LaSalle. That is the type of community that we sometimes have trouble, although there are some communities that size that have access. I want to thank, there are many vendors who are creative in many ways, many communities who are working hard to get higher speed fiber and higher speed service to their industrial parks. An area where we have great challenge are entrepreneurs and individual businesses who are more rural, who may want to start a business in at their home that's 5 miles out of the nearest town. And I don't think we want to say that 100% of telecommuters, entrepreneurs, inventors, engineers, scientists have to move to town. And so we look at it as perhaps our highest priority is helping communities to be competitive for manufacturing, call centers, larger scale retail, many of the things that need high capacity. But we don't want to ignore those entrepreneurs. Our business development strategy is to help current businesses stay and grow in Minnesota, to attract businesses that aren't yet in Minnesota to see the quality of life here, and to help those with ideas where they spark or a vision, the inventors start and grow businesses. And broadband's an important component of that. And what it costs is important. And I would be remiss in not saying we've had some great successes and in places that are good news. 2 years ago, we had two major data centers located in Elk River and had a host of electric and telephone and broadband utilities work together to make that possible. We work on successes like that in other places. There are other days when that's a challenge. We do get some program dollars currently in programs like our business development, Greater Minnesota Business Development Infrastructure Grants, and a portion of those can be used to help with this. They're usually within an industrial park or an industrial site, and we're not in the utility, broad, long-scale utility business. We also help in urban areas with the redevelopment fund and in our bioscience infrastructure fund in some cases. Those are limited resources, but sometimes broadband is what is needed. We're excited about this report. As I said at the news conference, one of the aspects of this report is to equalize the place equation and to make it possible for Minnesota's high quality of place, wherever that is for you. It might be on the banks of the Mississippi in downtown Minneapolis or downtown St. Paul, or it might be in a very remote rural area. But to make more of the world global economy available from wherever you choose to be, and so the quality of life and quality of place that we have to offer becomes an opportunity and not a barrier to inclusive prosperity. We're looking forward to working with the Department of Commerce and with a wide variety of partners on this issue. We think it's an opportunity for Minnesota. And very honestly, more opportunity than problem, but there are the opportunities don't just sit still. It is one where we have to continue to get better and better to be competitive. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Very good, Commissioner. Maybe we could take two questions if there's anyone that has a specific question. Commissioner McElroy. Representative Kiffmeyer, do you have a question?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. Last time I had mentioned the question about jobs, creating, maintaining jobs, and it was deferred to Commissioner McElroy, so I get to put you on the hot seat here a little bit. I know that's near and dear to your heart. But, you know, statement being made about creating and maintaining jobs, I think that is really important. All of these other Commissioner Wilson testified excellently in regards to the real material value to us as people. And that was excellent. But in this creating and maintaining jobs, I can kind of maybe guess that up. I consider you an expert on it. So how would we create and maintain jobs in regards to this particular kind of technology?
Commissioner McElroy.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kiffmeyer, this is one component of decisions that people make to locate, grow, build a job. I don't think anybody is going to come and say the city of blank has ultra-broadband fiber, that's the only thing that's important to me. It is one component, along with a great workforce, other business climate issues, clusters and sectors of industry that are successful. It's about meeting the needs, and the needs are going to be different for different businesses. We look at the 13 industry clusters that we target, and those are on our website at positivelyminnesota.com, and many of them have needs, some of which we meet, some of which we have to keep working really hard to continue to meet. Wind turbine parks all have broadband capacity, and we have to work with local providers and help get it out there. Some of the things that we do in manufacturing are going to be industrial parks. Some of the things that we're going to do in biofuels may not be in traditional industrial parks, but along railroad facilities, they're going to need highway and electric utilities. It's one ingredient that has to be there. I can't think of a time when it's the only ingredient. And it's not just on the utility side. It's also on the capable workforce side. Mr. Chair, one thing I forgot to mention. We do have an interesting website for members who may want to know what's the status in your community. MNPro.com, www.mnpro.com is Minnesota Profiles. And the community profiles provide communities the opportunity to explain what broadband service they have, their internet providers, and a variety of other utilities. We encourage communities to keep it up to date, and some do a wonderful job, some a little less so. But it's, and we're in the process of improving the capability of that site. But if you're interested, mnpro.com.
Very good. Thank you, Commissioner. All right. Well, thank you for your testimony. And I think we'll bring up Gopal Khanna. Is he still here? Mr. Khanna, thank you for being here today. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, for the record, my name is Gopal Khanna. I'm the Chief Information Officer for the state of Minnesota. As head of the Office of Enterprise Technology, the state's lead agency responsible for providing information technology services to government entities, I believe we have a watershed moment here before us. It was a pleasure to be part of this exercise over the last 15 months, and I believe that the issues before us are, and if I may take 2 minutes to present a perspective, that today, the citizens are used to what I call the Google, Amazon, and eBay experience. When they wake up in the middle of the night and want to take care of their banking transaction, they can do that online. When they want to take care of their travel arrangements, they can do so anytime, anywhere. The construct of government as we know it in terms of delivery of services is really an 80-year-old model where it was designed to serve the citizens in line across the window. Going forward, since this, our citizens in Minnesota are used to online mode of conducting their business with the private sectors and in their businesses, they expect same kind of accessibility and availability from the government as well. Today, all our government services are dependent upon availability of and connectivity in a secure mode all across the state. Going forward, it's going to be key to having a robust digital cyber infrastructure upon which we can deliver those services in the time frames that our citizens expect and demand. They demand real-time online access to their data and services. It is key to deployment of our projects, projects like e-licensing system, which we currently are working with Department of Labor and Industry, whereby we will provide online access to our businesses and occupational licensee holders so that they can do business with the state. Going forward, having that access is key to good government and good governance, as well as making our government citizen-centric. Thank you.
Mr. Khanna, how are we doing right now as a government, statewide, and in our connections to the various counties? Where are we at relative to where we want to be?
The Office of Enterprise Technology provides through its MNET capabilities, which is one of the most phenomenal public-private partnership deployment anywhere in the country. We provide access to and delivery of services to all our government entities and agencies across the state, and one-third of K through 12. So literally a child sitting in a classroom in northern Minnesota can receive instructions from Mayo Clinic or from an instructor sitting in China. We provide great access, and the services today, whether it be, again, content in the classroom or supporting the 911 calls or the first responders, comes across very well. The demand pull for that access is increasing every day. So we'll have to continually work on our capacity and capability when it comes to the connectivity of our state to ensure that we meet that customer demand going forward.
Thank you. Any other questions from members? Representative Johnson.
Just to the testifier and to the members, I appreciate what you say, and you're right. We expect it from government. One of the issues that continues is a uniformity of information available from local governments. And I think your office and other departments, Department of Revenue in particular, when it comes to tax and those types of records out there, really need to step up and give some guidance out there to Association of Minnesota Counties and others. Because right now, every county does their own deal, and they continue to do that. And the technology runs the gamut from one end to the other, and the availability runs the gamut from one end to the other from your home computer as to what you can access. And again, Mr. Chair, as we think through it, I think we need to continue to bring folks like this before us, get their ideas, but also draw on some of our agency folks that deal with those government entities down on a local level, because it is not uniform and it is not available widely in a lot of counties, and it should be. And a lot of it is a parochialism that's still involved out there, and I think we're going to have to provide some guidance from a state level.
Very good, Representative. Representative Saylor, did you have a question as well?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm certainly seconding most of the remarks just made by Representative Junkie. But I wanted to make one comment in particular for Gopal Khanna. You were talking about the current level of service to schools. I found it interesting that last spring I was in a classroom doing a government presentation talk, and we were all set up to be online looking at all of the state websites, and it didn't work, like zero. And the teachers just rolled their eyes and said, "Welcome to our world." You know, this was my little small one-stoplight town. And the reason I bring that point up is because I think that there's a disparity between what we think is out there, particularly when I look at the map and I see kind of a rosy picture, perhaps, and it's like the whole area is supposed to be served. But what I keep hearing are different realities. It makes me sort of think a little bit like unemployment. You know, after a while, if there's a lot of unemployment, people just give up and they don't report anymore. I have heard a number of people saying, "Oh, we're not going to even complain anymore. There's no point. Maybe someday we'll get it." So I think that it's also for Mr. King. When you were out doing your survey and collecting some of these testimonials from people, I just wonder if you really got the full breadth of it, simply because what I detect, maybe not everywhere, but in many places in my district, is people have just given up. They're so frustrated that they tell me about it. But anyway, I think there's a disparity, and I think that that's something that we really have to keep in mind and we have to work at as we move ahead. When we do an assessment, I mean, if you ask your local telecom how things are, they're pretty rosy. I know, because I ask them frequently. And then when I ask the people next door, I hear a different story. So I don't know if it's that the service isn't there, or is it that people don't know or can't afford it? I know we've been through this before, but it kind of, you know, also brings up what Representative Junkie was saying about the fact of, you know, is there parochialism? But I think we still need to figure out how to address, if we really don't have the service really on the ground and people, businesses and schools aren't able to get what they're supposed to have, whatever the reason is, we need to move forward, and we need to address all of those issues. So I'm hoping that we'll be able to move that direction. Thank you.
Any follow-up comments?
Mr. Chairman, point well taken, and we are excited in OET to work with the other agencies, along with Commissioner Dan McElroy and Glenn Wilson and other stakeholders to really fulfill that demand pull that is taking place in the marketplace, which is far exceeding the capacity deployment on the ground. And that's exactly what Chairman Rick King had pointed out earlier as well.
Well, Mr. Connor, we look forward to working with you in the months ahead here as we develop this, and so I appreciate your comments today. We wanted to wrap up at 12:30. Maybe we'll go a few more minutes because we have one more testifier, but if there's some members that had to leave at 12:30, want to have a question or anything right now? No? Okay. We have one other testifier, Mr. Mike O'Connor, member of the task force. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Luxury of standing between a whole room full of people and lunch, so I will try to be brief. I appreciate the opportunity to testify.
Your comments are valuable to us, though. Welcome to the committee.
I'm an Irish guy, and so I have plenty of words that I could tell you. I'm cognizant of the time, so what I will do is sort of speak in shorthand and tell you parts of the report that I hope you will read carefully. And I'll just point them out to you today. Just by way of background, I was the urban consumer representative on the task force. I don't do this for a living. I'm a retired guy. Every day is a Saturday for me. And one of the advantages that that presents is that if anybody would like to talk to me either after the hearing or at any time online, I have more time available than many people on the task force and would be happy to go into more detail. Several sound bites. One sound bite that you've heard a lot today, and I want to just amplify it in a different way. That which gets measured gets done. Mapping's very important. We have another mapping project underway. There's reference to it in the report. We've got a long way to go on maps. I'm hopeful that the next round will be better. And I'll leave it at that. Another key soundbite. There are 8 reports that are kind of like this report that precede this report. They're sitting on shelves all over the state. This is a Jim Dandy report. I had a lot to do with it, and I'm very proud to be a part of this. But follow-through is the key. If there's no follow-through, then this will become report number 9, and I built a nice little mashup tune on the internet that's based on Revolution Number 9 by the Beatles that I'll play for you all. It's just the words number 9 over and over again, and this could become that if we don't do some sort of follow-through. You've heard about the council. I want to chime in right behind that. It goes with that which gets measured gets done. It goes with that which gets followed up gets done. We need some sort of ongoing council. There are 2 more councils that are buried in this report, and I want to amplify something else. There's a whole great big boatload of stuff about security, reliability, and redundancy in this report. There's a lot of detailed recommendations, but we weren't quite the right folks to really do this. When you contemplate a subsequent council, recognize that those probably won't either. You really need another council, another group that's real smart about this to take a hard look at that. There are some tasty issues buried in the report, starting on page 82 for those of you on the staff. We go into an awful lot of detail on that. That needs a different group of people to look at. Third group of people. The money part is really interesting. We've talked about that. This is not the best time, this is not the best economy to start talking about lots of money. And so one of the things that I'd point you to is that on page 80, there's a long list of other sources of money besides state government that we should weave together to put this together. And that needs a third group of people. It's not just financial experts. It's creative thinkers that can talk across that huge array. So page 80, take a look at that. I want to brag a little bit about this report because the telecom conversation is typified by consumer advocate types like me throwing pebbles at provider lobbyists. And at the beginning of this task force, we threw all our pebbles at each other. And it was great. We've all done that for years. We enjoyed it a lot. One of the things that this task force did that I've never seen before is we got some very disparate points of view to meet in the middle. So this report is not the perfect report for any of us, but it's a profoundly good report if you want to find a way that you can get consensus across all these different stakeholder groups. And I just want to brag about all of us for doing that. The fact that we all signed the back of this report, I don't know how many of these reports get signed, but that was a really big deal. It was a really emotional moment at the end of this. And I think that, you know, if my friends on that task force from the provider community and I had said that we would get to this place at the end, we'd all said, Mikey, you're just smoking that stuff you smoke all the time. There's no way we could have done it. And so it's quite profound the language that's in this report that has consensus from the points of view. Okay, I'm pushing here. Check out page 56. Representative Yonke brought it up. Representative Saylor brought it up. The notion of ubiquity. Now, the words in that section, a whole list of really detailed recommendations, but they are preceded, they kick off, I have to turn to the page so I can read it, because it's really, the one that I want you to highlight is, as with roads, electricity, and telephony, broadband has become an economic and social necessity for all citizens of the state, no matter where they are located. Then I want you to look at the next page, page 57, and I want to amplify another part of this report. See that little circle drawing on there? It's a little model. That's broadband in 12 words. And those 12 words are then delineated in subsequent pages. But the big deal is that this is something that lots of people have to do together. This isn't something the state does by itself. It's not something that the carriers do by themselves. It's not something that business people like me do. This is about collaboration. And to the extent that we can extend the collaboration that evolved on this committee, we can do something that's probably ahead of the national conversation. And so I'd really like you to look at page 56 and the next few pages. That was a really good part of our report. But I want to give you one final example of sort of how this report leads the national conversation. Because we were throwing pebbles at each other, but as you all know, on the national stage, they're throwing bricks at each other. And they've been throwing those bricks at each other for so long that they don't even, you know, it's just habit. So one of the bricks on the national conversation is the question of symmetry, symmetrical access upstream and downstream. Big rhubarb about that. It's been going on for years, and, you know, I threw that one into the conversation, and we got going, and we, because we were moving into this collaborative thing, we got beyond that. And what we say in the report on page 55, it's a little tiny paragraph, and it just says it's not really about symmetry. What it's about is having enough upstream bandwidth to get what you need done, done. And then if it turns out the downstream bandwidth is 10 times that, well, great. But the problem for the providers is if you say it must be symmetrical, that hoses up their architecture. It screws up a lot of things for them, probably almost unnecessarily. So I apologize, Mr. Chair, for taking so long. There's a lot of very carefully thought through language in this report. It's not flashy, but we all signed it, and I'm in this deal until somebody else walks out. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Connor, and thank you for pointing out the pages we should pay attention to. Appreciate that. Any final questions that didn't get asked, and we can address them now. Representative Beard.
Thank you, Chairman Dahl. You don't have to ask this now. It might be somewhat rhetorical, but it's a philosophical question. I'll read the report. I'm looking forward to coming back to our telecom committee. I'm sure we'll be visiting this again. How did we examine, and don't have to answer it now, but be prepared when it comes back in February. How did we examine the relationship between the subscriber and the provider? Whose responsibilities were weighed? How much weight was given to that relationship? And so on and so forth. I'd be interested in knowing the responsibilities that the subscribers have in this, as well as the providers, and whether or not you're proposing changing that relationship in some fashion, and so on and so forth. So ponder that, and we'll look forward to taking that up in a couple months, and perhaps it's in here. If you know a page number, give me a short answer, because we're running to lunch here real quick. So
I'll give you a short answer. When you talk about responsibilities, you start to tiptoe towards the question of regulation. And we spend a lot of time talking about regulation. What you will not find in this report is a strong regulatory hand being proposed at this time. We talk a little bit about it, but not very much. There's enough to do without uncorking that particular issue with all of the attendant pebbles, bricks, etc., that we very carefully, so the language to read on this, on that dimension, is the language that introduces the council. And I'm not sure I wrote that page number down, but it's in there somewhere. And the reason you want to read that language is because that was at least 3, maybe 4 meetings worth of conversation, plus endless subgroup meetings over the phone. Those words are very carefully crafted. We do not anticipate regulatory actions at this time.
Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you all for your presentation today. This is very helpful. For some of us, this is a lot of information to absorb all at once, and I do plan to go through the report more carefully. I noticed, at least maybe I haven't found it yet, in the report there's no way to access anybody. If I wanted to call, for example, Mr. O'Connor or email, is there a place where we could send future questions?
Mr. King.
Mr. Chair. Task Force has a website location. I believe that I'm not going to be as good as Mr. O'Connor and have all the material there.
Ultra-i-d-n.org.
Would you say that again, please?
No, because I'm kind of being a guy and sort of making it up, but the answer is such a place, and it's got all
We will see that you are that's made available to you if you don't have it.
You've got it in your packs.
We have it.
On that site are all the proceedings of the task force, all the minutes, everything that went on every meeting, as well as a directory of the of all of the members, their emails, address, and so forth. And I know they'd all welcome that. If you look in the black packet that you have, the website address is on one of those documents in there.
Mr. Casey, we got that's in the black folder. This sheet here has that information. One final question, I think, from Senator Dibble, and then we'll...
Just to thank you very much. The little bit that I got to benefit from sneaking in at the last minute here was actually extremely interesting, and I will go through the report in greater detail and engage the task force members in some more conversation. I'm glad you pointed out the pages. I looked at page 80 with the sources of funds it triggered, which speaks to a lot of synergies with a lot of other types of efforts and entities and initiatives that would benefit from advances in broadband technology. The other one that occurs to me, of course, is the smart grid. You probably already had a full-flung conversation about energy and utilities and the smart grid before I got here. So I apologize for coming in late and maybe dropping something on you that you've already been through, but lots of dollars coming down, lots of research and development, a lot of interest in that, and that may be another synergy, another opportunity.
Lots of opportunities for more conversations on this. We have reached our conclusion. I think I'll ask Representative Sheldon Johnson if he has any comments or thoughts you want to add to wrap things up.
No, other than thank folks for being here today, and again, thanks, Chairman King, for getting the group together and marching them through a course that wasn't always easy, but came up with a product I think we can all be proud of. I look forward to working with my colleagues here after the first year to discuss in depth the report we have before us and implement those actions that seem to make practical sense at this time. So with that, members, this meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
It's all we matched up what we asked them for and what we got. The only recommendation they missed was number 6.
Let me hear him write up something maybe in the
Okay. To do that is go back and do the bottom check.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. I mean, let's do that. Let's pick a time. When are you around?